Tarzan of the Apes, brought to you from out the pages of Edgar Rice Burroughs' romantic book. Hidden behind the screen of festooned creepers, Tarzan, forehead wrinkled in thought, tries to decipher Jane Porter's letter. After hours of study, he has at last found a resemblance between the bugs of his picture book and the girl's handwriting. He shakes his head. The contents of the letter baffles him. He can read it, but all that it means to him is that her name is J-A-N-E. And though he cannot express it in sound, he feels an association, a kinship, a bond, a something that was not there before. Tarzan folds the letter carefully, places it in the bottom of his quiver, and rises to his feet. He faces that red disk that is the setting sun. All about him, seen and unseen, the beasts of the jungle, Numa the lion, Tantor the elephant, even the little mongoose, all, great and small, are facing the west. There, tinting the mountain that straddles the equator, is that which all the beasts of the jungle worship, the setting sun. Tarzan watches the deep greens fade to purple, blend again into deeper blue, and then, lost in the sky, the snow cap sparkles with reflected gold. We find Jane Porter and Clayton watching the same sunset.
What a perfectly gorgeous sunset. Daddy, Mr. Philander. Why don't you join Cecil and me outside the hut? It's so nice and cool after the heat of the day, and the sunset is so beautiful on the sea.
A very excellent suggestion, Jane.
But don't you think I'd better get you something to put over your shoulder? The tropic evening is as dangerous as it is magnificent.
Strange, isn't it? That rose, the jungle, everything here that is so beautiful should be so terrifying, so dangerous.
But that, my dear, is life, which, like the toad, ugly and venomous, wears yet a precious jewel in its head.
And this, our life, exempt from public haunts, finds tongues in trees, books in the running brooks, sermons in stone, and good in everything. Ah, my dear Clayton, it's so refreshing to find in an army man an acquaintanceship with the immortal Bard of Avon.
Possibly Shakespeare found books in the running brooks. But you, Daddy, require something much drier than a brook.
I believe, Professor, if we'd only rescued our chessmen with which to beguile our evenings, you and I would find the setting perfect.
Oh, you too. If you were interested in the beauties of our surroundings, oh, but no. Nothing appeals to you unless it is wrinkled with age.
Well, come, my dear.
Never mind, Daddy. I was only teasing you.
Oh, by Jove.
What's the matter, Cecil?
I completely forgot to look at our beacon today. Monkeys or other animals might come upon it and drag away the wood, but it's cost me a sore back to gather and pile there. I'll just jog along and look it over.
Dark is coming on, Cecil. Couldn't you leave it till morning?
I'd rather not. It's one of my duties, and I'll feel better if I look after it tonight.
I'll come along with you, Cecil. I feel the need of exercise.
Oh, good. We shan't be long. Come along, dear.
Tarzan sees the figures of Clayton and Jane moving up the beach toward the headland. The setting sun dips over the horizon, and the long, tapering shadows of the jungle cast a mellow twilight across the clearing toward the beach. Tarzan wonders where the humans can be going at such an hour. Usually, they lock themselves into their cabin at sunset. Curious, he swings himself along the upper reaches of the gigantic jungle trees, lazily, almost carelessly. To Tarzan, who covers many miles an hour through the trees, the white man and woman below move at the pace of tiny beetles. The figures come to a stop before a pile of dry wood, heaped upon a promontory which looks out to sea. Tarzan drops swiftly, noiselessly, easily to the lower branches in order to gaze more clearly at that white she to whom he is so strongly attracted. Blood calls to blood. Tarzan at this moment would give almost anything to drop from his perch, boldly walk out and talk to these, his own kind. A shyness overcomes him. He hears Jane's questioning voice, Clayton's answers, and inhibitions born of contact with the wild bid him remain hidden from those he cannot understand.
Evidently no animals have been here. I suppose.
Why, it looks as though it hadn't been touched. I think you did a wonderful job in making it, Cecil.
No, it wasn't anything. Only wanted a bit of work in the doing.
Look across that water. Thousands of miles of it. Oh, Cecil, do you think that any ship will ever come for us?
Now, look here, Jane. You've got to keep your mind on other things. You can't be longing and yearning for something like that without going a bit balmy, you know.
All right, Cecil. I won't think of it anymore.
There are wonderful things right here to absorb, aren't you?
Wonderful. And the most wonderful thing of all is that white man from the forest.
Do you know, I can't for the life of me understand what a white man can be doing off here in the midst of the African jungle.
Do you suppose he might be Tarzan of the Apes?
I don't know. It may be possible.
Yes. The man who has saved us from the animals doesn't speak English. And we know that Tarzan of the Apes does because of the note we found pinned to the door.
Well, it's beyond me.
Cecil, what's that beating?
I don't know. I've heard native drums in other parts of the world, but that sound isn't like anything I've ever heard.
Oh, Cecil, it frightens me.
Oh, sure. I don't suppose it's anything to be frightened of, really. Come along. I'll race you back to the hut.
Tarzan hears the weird, compelling throb of the dum-dum. He looks down at Jane Porter and Clayton, but his eyes see only the huge earthen drum far off in the clearing sacred to the great apes, the sacrificial altar of his tribe. Now he's torn between two desires. His heart it is, though he knows it not, that calls to him to stay and watch this fascinating she. But all the background of years calls out to him to join his tribe in this fair dance of victory. He starts after Jane and Clayton. The rhythm of the drums changes. He stops, hesitates. Looks again at the two below him. The throbbing of the drum pulses in his blood and he turns toward the sound, swings into the leafy trail that leads to the dum-dum. Down in the hut by the shore, Professor Porter and Philander, awaiting James and Clayton's return, discuss the events of the past few days.
I have been meaning to speak of it for some time, Mr. Philander, but we've so seldom been alone since the day the lion...
Quite so, Professor Porter, quite so.
I wish to speak to you concerning the skeletal remains of...
Of Lord and Lady Greystoke? Yes, yes, I understand.
And now, Mr. Philander, I beg of you, please check this irritating propensity for jumping at conclusions. It was not of the mere mature beings that I wish to speak, but of the...
But of the baby skeleton, Professor?
Quite so. You will doubtless recall that I brought to your attention at the time the baby skull.
You did, Professor, and I gave my opinion, and I give it again, that the skull was simian. One of the anthropoid apes.
That coincides perfectly with my own opinion, my dear Philander. I wish to caution you, however, lest you let slip some incautious remark before Jane and Clayton. I feel that it would only unnecessarily disturb their minds to let them into the secret.
Don't worry, Professor. No unguarded remark of mine shall betray it.
Philander, do you notice some sort of drumming noise? Some,
Do you notice it too, Professor?
I noticed it, of course I noticed. I noticed everything. I've heard it for the last 10 minutes.
I didn't like to say anything about it. I feared it was one of my old headaches starting again.
Hello, the hut. Hello. Hear the drum?
Yes. Philander and I were just remarking about them. Perhaps you can explain such phenomena, Clayton.
No, I'm afraid not. Weird, isn't it?
We heard them start. Do you suppose some black-necked tribe could be as close to us?
Oh, no. We'd have had some wind of them before now. Well, at any rate, I think we'd better go inside.
Deep in the almost impenetrable fastness of the jungle, the great apes circle in mad confusion their earthen drum. From out that hollow mass comes the death throbbing that penetrates to the uttermost corners of the wilderness. Faster and faster, leaping, snapping, gyrating in fearful contortions, the apes pause in their dizzy circling to beat with short sticks upon the drum-like mound. The female apes and their offspring swaying back and forth to the uncanny rhythm, form an outer circle about the maddened bulls. Leaping higher than any, his brawny, wet, big body gleaming in the moonlight, his Tarzan, pounding in and out of circling, he comes upon a brute of an ape, Jack-Lot, a people whom this celebration is being headed. Jack-Lot has killed Colonel Volcani's tribe, but is alive to tell the tale. Only Tarzan, before this, has killed a gorilla and seen another day. Tarzan stepped up to the great bull and pumps the hairy chest in token of congratulations. Jack-Lot's eyes shine with pride. He leaps into the center of the circling gate, beats his chest with massive hairy paws, and shatters the night air with a fearful, piercing scream, proclaiming himself a mighty hunter, a mighty killer. The The moon pales in the sky. The great apes sleep the deep sleep of utter exhaustion. Not so Tarzan. Fearful lest in his absence something may have happened to White She, he returns to the hut. Quietly, with cat-like tread, he creeps to the lattice, tests it. Well within the shadow, he moves to the door, cautiously lifts the latch. The door holds. Satisfied that those within are safe, Tarzan lifts himself into the trees, curls himself in a moss-grown crotch, and falls asleep.